तत्सवितुर्वरेण्यं भर्गो देवस्य धीमहि धियो यो न प्रचोदयात्। ॐ मे वी मेडिटेट ऑन दैट सुप्रीम बीइंग हु ड्वेल्स इन द हार्ट्स ऑफ ऑल, इज द सोर्स and sustenance of this universe. In Him we live, move, and have our being. May He illumine our hearts, and may He guide us in every way. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Peace, peace. We have been studying the Viveka Chudamuni and the crest jewel of discrimination. As propounded by the great seer philosopher Shankara. Shankara gives here in this book the ultimate truth, and which is that the true self, the real self within us, in every one of us, is one with Brahman or God. What Christ had realized when He said, I and my Father are one. Or what the Sufis, the Sufi mystics realized, Anal Haq, I am He. Or the seers of the Upanishads realized, I am Brahman. That is the supreme truth. And that truth is brought out very clearly and definitely in this treatise. And then he points out how to realize that. You see, religion, whether it is Christianity or Hinduism or Buddhism, is not mere theory, not mere belief, but it is an experience. And that is the experience, the highest experience is to realize that unity, that oneness with Brahman. Oftentimes we mistake religion as identical with having some visions. There are mystic visions which are wonderful. There are ecstatic experiences and visions which are most wonderful. And if we consider such visions as the ultimate truth of religion, if we feel that we have attained that, then we are mistaken. Now again in this connection I can point out to you that how, for instance, some drugs can give some visions. But those are not the same as the mystic visions. They are mostly either hallucination or, if they are true, they are psychic visions. And there is a big difference between psychic visions and mystic or spiritual visions. Big difference. Only those who have experienced both kinds can see the difference. Otherwise, having some psychic vision, one may think, I have got this spiritual vision. I have this spiritual experience. It's the same as Vedanta or Zen or anything that talks about. But that is all nonsense. We point out, even if you have spiritual visions, if you have ecstasy, and you see God, you have the firm conviction that here I see God, I have the bliss of God. You see, that experience can come and does come. But that's not enough. The ultimate truth is to be established in this knowledge that I am Brahman, that this Atman, the true being, is Brahman, and I am that Atman. He does not anymore identify himself with the sheaths, as presently, or in the next chapter, he will bring out how there are different sheaths covering the Atman. And there is this identification with the sheaths. For instance, my body hurts, and I feel I am hurt, or I am sick, or I am healthy. You see, these are when, as long as we identify ourselves with the body. But we have to reach a stage when we can, at will, take our mind off the body. Then it doesn't matter. When we realize this body is just like a dress, wearing apparel, and it gets old, you throw away and put on a new apparel. Same with death. And you have to be established in that consciousness. And that is what is meant by religion as realization or experience. It's not having visions. Visions are wonderful. Swami Vivekananda used to say, they are milestones on your progress. You know, I remember one time a friend of mine who didn't join our monastery, but he renounced the world and went to the Himalayas to practice meditation and austerity. And then he wrote me a letter that he had attained samadhi. Within 3 months, and he had no guru or teacher. And I happened to be with Maharaj at the time, and I asked him. He knew that man. So I asked him, so and so has written to me that he has attained samadhi. And Maharaj said, but I saw him about 10 days back. I looked at his eyes. He didn't have anything like that. He may have had some vision of light and which he considered as samadhi. And so there is that danger, you know. So, visions, sometimes one may not have any kind of vision at all. And yet he will be growing spiritually. And what are the signs of the growth? You have a greater control over your passions. You have grown love for God. You feel sweetness in his thought, and you love to think of God. You see, those are the signs of progress. And your heart goes out in compassion and sympathy for all beings. These are the signs of growth. But that is growth, not yet the end. The ultimate experience you have to transcend. You have to transcend this physical experience. Physical and psychic and causal, you see, there are different experiences. And beyond the causal you have to go. That is samadhi. And when, as I told Maharaj about that, and Maharaj said, is it so easy to have samadhi? Then he described the effects of samadhi by quoting a verse from the Upanishads. The knots of the heart are cut asunder. All doubts cease to exist. all karmas of the past are wiped out by him who has seen the Atman, the Self. And then again, Sri Ramakrishna used to emphasize upon this, that it is possible for everyone to realize the Atman. Because he is within you. You are that. And in order again that we can realize that, there must be a true understanding. At least intellectual understanding we have to have in the beginning. But again I must point out to you that you have an intellectual understanding, but when you have the experience, when you really experience the truth of God, something different. That is beyond our conception. But still we must reason out, discriminate, and try to have an intellectual understanding. And so he tries to give us that intellectual understanding, points out what is that Atman, what is the difference between the Atman and the sheaths that cover this Atman, and how we are identifying ourselves with these sheaths. When you say, I am Brahman, that does not mean the I that you know to be, know yourself to be, not that empirical self. And so those are the points that he elaborates and explains. And then again gives us the methods, the ways by which we can attain that. The Atman's bondage to the non-Atman springs from ignorance. You see, this is the philosophy that this great seer philosopher brings out. That Brahman is there. Atman is one with Brahman. But there is the ignorance, he calls it Maya. That is Maya when it comes to the universal ignorance. Because this ignorance is not merely you and I are ignorant, but it's a universal ignorance. And one who may be very intellectual, have encyclopedic knowledge of things, but still there is ignorance in him. It's something universal. And that is called Maya. And the individual ignorance is called avidya. Same meaning, ignorance. Only avidya refers to the individual ignorance. Now the ignorance, this Maya or avidya, covers the Brahman, the Atman. And then again creates something else. And what is that? Empirical self, this ego. What is that ego? The Atman identifying itself with the sheaths, body, mind, senses, etc. And let me point out the distinction between, intellectual understanding and true knowledge. For instance, every one of us, if we try to analyze, we shall find that I am not this body. You see, anybody can understand that intellectually. But in our behavior, in our action, in everything, all the time we are identifying ourselves with this body. And then, not only that, you see, you may say, I am Atman, I am Brahman. And let me pinch you. You are no longer the Atman, that blissful Atman. You are the body. You feel that. You are identifying yourself with the body. An illumined soul, a knower of God, yes, he has to identify himself with the body also. He has to assume that ignorance when he is teaching, when he is living, but any moment he can withdraw himself from that consciousness and unite himself with Brahman. The Atman's bondage to the non-Atman means this body, the mind, the senses. You see, that is non-Atman. This body is not the Atman, yet it's a bond. The Atman is in bondage, as it were, with identifying itself with the non-Atman. And it springs from ignorance. It has no external cause. You see, you cannot say, God gave us this ignorance. No. Because when you find God, you realize he didn't give you any ignorance because you didn't have any ignorance at all. You know, oftentimes this question is asked, but how did this ignorance come if God did not give us this ignorance? The answer is simply impossible. Because the question itself is not very logical. Why it is not logical? Do you really feel that you are in ignorance? We don't. That's the trouble. Now again, the answer is given this way. As long as we are in ignorance, we do not know the answer. When we have the knowledge, there is no ignorance. And with that knowledge, there comes this knowledge that you have never been in ignorance. You are always free, pure, divine. And so the question does not arise. Now, you know, one time Shankara asked himself this question, but whose is this ignorance? The Atman cannot have the ignorance. Atman is ever free, ever knowing, full of knowledge, absolute knowledge and blissful. Atman can have no ignorance. And this empirical self is the product of ignorance. So whose is the ignorance? And Shankara says, one who is asking this question, his is the ignorance. Which means again, that as we wake up a little, as the awakening comes a little, then we know, I am in ignorance. And then you become a spiritual aspirant. You try to free yourself from that ignorance and attain that knowledge of God. But otherwise, you see, general people, you ask, are you in ignorance? I said, what nonsense are you talking? I am a PhD. You see? Or even to one who is illiterate, say, are you in ignorance? You say, what nonsense are you talking? But when there comes the awakening, a little awakening, then you feel, yes, I am in ignorance. And then there comes that attempt. And you become a spiritual aspirant. The Atman's bondage to the non-Atman springs from ignorance. It has no external cause. It is said to be beginningless. It has no beginning. But here comes a very intricate question. If it is beginningless, naturally you conclude that it is endless. And in a sense, you see, Maya, the universal Maya, is beginningless and it is endless. But avidya, this individual ignorance, is beginningless, but it has an end. How is that possible? Shankara will answer that later, you know. That very question was asked of him. You see, ignorance is not anything positive, a positive thing. It is lack of knowledge. And as such, when the knowledge comes, the lack of knowledge goes away. Or he gives illustration that an object which you see now, the lack of that object was from a beginningless time. For instance, he says, take this watch. This watch did not exist from a beginningless time, but it came into existence at a certain period. So that lack of this watch was from a beginningless time, but it ended with the existence of the watch. It's not something positive. It's something negative. It will continue indefinitely, this beginningless ignorance will continue indefinitely until a man becomes enlightened. As soon as you have enlightenment, not in ordinary sense of the term, not what the dictionary meaning is, but this enlightenment means, in Sanskrit we call prajna, the enlightened knowledge of God, and which means again to be established in the experience that I am blissful, I am divine, I am free, I am one with Brahma. To be established in that knowledge. So, when you become established in that knowledge, the ignorance disappears. As long as a man remains in the bondage, it subjects him to a long train of miseries, birth, death, sickness, decrepitude, and so forth. You see, this is the point that we should consider, that we must remember in the teachings of Vedanta, that they do not condemn anybody. And they point out that everybody will attain that illumination sometime or other. Because the nature of the Atman is free, perfect, divine. And this ignorance, though beginningless, has an end. And everyone will have that attainment of knowledge. But until then, there is suffering. Now again, you see, Buddha also pointed out, in fact, he based his whole philosophy, his whole religion, on this universal experience of mankind, of suffering. Not pessimistic. There is happiness, nobody denies that. There is happiness, there is health, there is happiness. But there is disease, there is death, there is suffering. And this happiness or health or pleasures that we may experience in life are so short-lived. They do not last. And that which is not lasting, you see, there's the seed of suffering. So in every happiness, in every pleasure, there is the seed of suffering and misery. And as long as we depend upon our pleasures and happiness by having the senses come in touch, in contact with objects, so long there is also suffering. We have the happiness, we have the misery. And so this train of suffering continues until man wakes up and struggles and attains that illumined knowledge of God. This bondage cannot be broken by weapons or by wind or by fire or by millions of acts. Nothing but the sharp sword of knowledge can cut through this bondage. It is forged by discrimination and made keen by purity of heart through divine grace. Now, I'll take this up later. But in this connection again, let me point out one truth that comes to me. You see, Atman, Brahman, these are mere words to us. But God, you know, we are used to such terms, God or Christ or Krishna or Buddha or Ramakrishna. In other words, our chosen ideal, that is the Atman. In other words, when you are seeking God, you cannot find Him anywhere else but here, within your own self, within the shrine of your own heart. And God is dwelling there. For instance, when you go to pray to God, don't think that He's way out there. And you are not sure if He is listening to your prayer. No, that is not true. He's right within you. If you pray to Christ, or if you pray to Buddha, or if you pray to Ramakrishna, that Krishna, that Christ, that Ramakrishna is not way out there. Right here. He's the Atman within you. And about His listening to your prayer, before that prayer comes into your mind consciousness, He knows it. You see? You cannot hide anything from Him. We have a saying of Sri Ramakrishna that God's ear is so keen that even He can hear the footsteps of an ant. So He listens. And this is one thing that we should always bear in mind and try to convince ourselves again and again. Call Him God or Brahman or Atman or Christ or Ramakrishna, any name you may give, is right here. Your consciousness that you have is the borrowed consciousness of that Christ within. Convince this to yourself. May I invite questions?
The oral questions from the audience are being revoiced due to their being off mic during the original recording. If God is so close and hears every thought, why is it so hard to reach Him?
Because we don't believe. We don't have the faith. We don't have the purity of heart. You see? There's dirt and dust accumulated in the mind. And there's the divine bliss. You have asked a very interesting question. The answer is this. Simply I can put it in the words of Sri Ramakrishna. There's a magnet drawing the needle, wants to draw the needle. But the needle is dirty and dusty. If that dirt is removed, the needle will feel that drawing, that power of the magnet, and will come to it. That is the divine grace. Now, there is that divine grace. Lord is willing to listen to him and come to you. But there are impurities. As it says, you have to attain that purity of heart. And Sri Ramakrishna used to say this way, that weep for God. As you weep for God, just as the dirt and dust can be wiped out, washed out, so your weeping will wash out all the dirt of your conscience, of your mind. In other words, you have to create that hunger, that longing, that thirst for God. You see, there comes that self-struggle. But one thing our Master told us, if you take one step towards God, he comes down 100 steps towards you. So I tell you, it is very simple. If you want it, and it is, he is very near, he's the soul of your soul, and again he's far away. Because we are seeking for some other things. Well, I want God if God would give me something else. You see? No, God is a jealous God. If you have attachment or love for anything else, God says, all right, have your fill, and then come back to me. I'm quoting this somewhere from Old Testament, you see. My God is a jealous God. And that is the fact. And the moment you give your whole heart to him, when you learn to love the Lord with all, Lord thy God, with all thy heart, remember these words, with all thy heart, with all thy soul, with all thy mind, with all thy strength. So analyze yourself. Do I want him? Again, let me point out how Holy Mother used to teach to pray for being desireless. Only have desire for God. How many are ready? Tell me that. And the moment, and of course I tell you, have all your desires, you see, have to fulfill your desires. No use in trying to, as Ramakrishna used to say, when you have a sore spot, no use trying to break the skin until it is healed. Then, when it is dried up, the sore, it falls away, the scale falls away of itself. Similarly, we need to go through experiences of pleasure, experiences of the world, you see, and come to the understanding, to this discrimination, that there's nothing in that. And then, when we can give our whole heart to him, He is immediately available to you.
We read in the Gospel that as you develop spiritual practices, as you devote yourself, you develop a spiritual body.
You what?
That you develop a spiritual body.
Yes, yes.
What exactly is that spiritual body?
It's very difficult to make anybody understand. But it is a symbolic thing, really. It is not a literal thing. It's a symbolic thing. In other words, you see, you develop spiritual senses, if I can say that. Rather contradiction in terms. But spiritual senses, as it were. And you enjoy, you see, the enjoyments of the senses are so lower. If you ever taste the bliss of that enjoyment, you see, life, spiritual life, is not dry. As you grow, it is dry to begin with. But when there comes unfoldment, those experiences are so great. For instance, you can enjoy the fragrance of God's body, as it were, a new sense has developed in you. It's all there, remaining in potential form in all of us. Are you here? As we have the physical senses, so the same way, the senses, spiritual senses develop, evolve, as it were. And you enjoy the bliss of God, the union with God.
Can you live in that spiritual body?
Well, no, yes, you see, you are having the ecstatic experience through that body. You see, when you have an ecstatic vision of God, that spiritual body has become evolved in you. And, of course, it is there, you are living in that body. And, of course, until your final liberation, which is beyond all this experience, what I pointed out, to be established in the knowledge, I am that blissful Atman, I am that pure consciousness. Then again you go beyond all that. See, there are so many stages, so many stages. And my master used to say, light, more light, more light, then you die. Is there any end to it? And he would say, after Nirvikalpa Samadhi, spiritual life begins. Can you imagine? So this is a wonderful, wonderful object of exploration, if I can say that. But again, you see, each individual has a capacity. For instance, Swamiji, he could live in samadhi and not be agitated at all. You would not see any expression outside. He would be in ecstasy, but no expression outside. But if you and I have ecstasy, you find quite expressions outside, external expressions. We have seen Maharaj Swami Brahmananda about to go into samadhi. You could see all the signs, and then you do stand up and walk. And control that.
Why did he control it?
By controlling, again, you get greater experience. How should I know? It's very difficult to explain why. Yes, we shall be very happy if we have that. And you see about Holy Mother, Swamiji said, she lived in samadhi all the time, but no outward expression. Those are beyond our understanding. That one thing very tangible. If you think of God, if you meditate on God, if your mind is concentrated and not distracted, then you find a peace, you find a sweetness that the world cannot give. It's something tangible which everybody can experience or realize if you want it. But if your mind is distracted, you are asking for something else, it's a different matter. And in spiritual life, I always quote this, it's not my words, but another man said, there's no failure in spiritual life as long as you keep up this struggle.
Sahanabhavatu, sahanau hunaktu, sahavirjam karavavahai, tejasinavatitamastu, mahavidvishavahai. Om. May Brahman protect us, may he guide us, may he give us strength and right understanding, may we have love for all. May our study bring light unto us. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Peace, peace, peace.